Welcome in to the Lineup Logic Podcast, the NBA Daily Fantasy Podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I am Sean Kane. I am your host, and I feel like I haven't done this in a million years. All the baseball, everybody all getting up in arms about baseball. Of course, we had no like decent Saturday slate to break down. Fern did the Sunday slate, and then Monday with that weird one-gamer, just Portland-Minnesota, which Portland loses that game. God, you think they miss Nurk yet? I miss Nurk. You guys know I miss Nurk. Craziness, though, that they lost that game. Minnesota needed it big time. But yeah, we took Monday off, obviously, because of the little itty-bitty slate there. No reason to break down just the one game. But we did, for those interested, we did spend the day tailoring our MLB cheat sheet. So, patrons, if you want a double dip, it's going to be double dipping all month long. Because, I mean, Josh and me and KG and Spectre, we're playing MLB. So we may as well be, hitting you guys with our thoughts, our research on the Patreon. So, I mean, if for April subscribers, you're getting a twofer right now. So pretty sweet for patrons in there. And of course, thank you to the patrons who are new to April. You know, we're going to keep breaking down NBA slates, giving you guys NBA cheat sheets and, you know, MLB cheat sheets if you want to dabble in there. But hey, we got a massive 11 gamer right now. We got to break down the night to come in the NBA. We'll talk spreads. We'll talk injury news. We'll talk playoff situations. We'll talk minutes. You know, we got to figure out where we want to put our money. I don't think it's crazy. There's some interesting things to figure out and learn about roster construction these days in NBA DFS. You know, we've seen these massive numbers and massive scores, and I think we have to think about how we're building rosters now in a different way than we ever did. Not ever did, but the different way than we were doing in April, where we were going single stud or we were going with two very obvious values and then, you know, building out from the 7Ks. It's just not the same, and I think we have to go with the tide here and figure out how to build lineups a little bit differently this time of year. And that's okay. Hey, man, I'm ready to do it. I did it on I did it on Saturday night with some success. So what we'll do in the before we jump into the player breakdown, though, let's recap. I'm going to do two things. I'm going to recap Friday, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about Saturday. One of these nights. Okay, so I just realized I said Friday and Saturday. I meant Friday and Sunday. I didn't play on Saturday. I just wasn't interested in that slate, really. So, looking back at what we saw on those two slates, I think we can see a couple interesting things. So obviously last week was pretty tilting late in the week. We saw massive numbers all the way across the league. I mean, no kidding when we're saying, you know, cash numbers for just for 50-50s well into the 320s on Friday night, for example, just absolutely bananas. You know, I got 317 and didn't earn a dollar. So the Friday night lineup, I ended up staying on Kemba, and I got onto Elfrid Payton because of the Avery Bradley news. I think that affects guys. I think that really does affect the way Boston plays their backcourt defense. They're just not as good. It forces IT onto these guys, and you know their screen cover. It's just not as good. So it was Kemba and it was Elf. Crushed. Both had 47 points at 7K. That's an amazing number. Almost 7X for both of them. Great. Took Clay, who hit 40 against Houston. That was great. Had Rodney Hood. Nah, not great. I mean, the value shooting guards were anywhere between 15 to 25 points that night, and I had the wrong ones. That was frustrating for me. A difference of 6 to 8 points. Just, that makes a big difference for me in this, you know, so those value guys. Chris Middleton had a really nice game, that overtime game with Detroit, 37 points, you know, just above 6X there. Jaylen Brown, he got, you know, he became kind of the one of the big small forward punts You know, 3,800, but he, again, only went for 14. So my two value guys kind of hurt me, really only going about 4X there. Everybody else, you know, everybody else that I paid for in the sevens and sixes going above value. Draymond Green, he hurt me too. Only 30 points against Houston. Definitely saw a bigger outing for him coming in that competitive game, but just didn't do enough. Of course, then the bounce back in Washington, he goes for 44. Frustrating. James Johnson didn't do enough either. That was really frustrating to see him. Miami just didn't show up. They played excellent on the road in New York, and then they played terrible at home the next night. And of course, Boogie. The world was on Boogie, and Boogie performed. It was a beautiful thing to see him destroy Sacramento, go for 63 fantasy points, 37 points and 13 rebounds. The blocks, the steals, they were all there. So, you know, that was chalky. But, you know, we look at some of the lineups, and one of the things that, you know, I talked to you guys about this. One of the things that we try to do sometimes is we try to differentiate ourselves from the Sharks. Okay. The Sharks are guys, you know, they were all on the same stuff. Okay. They were all on the same stuff, but they were on, there was a real propensity to basically go with as many stars and scrubs as you can possibly go. Okay. And I'm looking at some of the top scores from some of the Sharks that I see out here, you know, and you start to identify them, by the way, you know who they are. And if you want to, you know who they are, you just look for them. They're going to be in every single cash game that you're in. But the Sharks, you know, basically took, you know, three serious punt plays in every single lineup and then built out their lines from there. You know, and I think we have to consider what they're doing as part of our strategy as well, because at this point in the season, what we're seeing is we're seeing a ton of guys who are in the 3 and 4K range get way more minutes than they're accustomed to. And that's the difference. I mean, you think about this Philadelphia rotation. Think about this Phoenix rotation, stuff like that. Those guys are getting huge numbers of minutes, okay? Plus injuries, right? The Memphis is totally banged up. Zebo has been getting 1,000,001 minutes lately. You have to kind of, these guys, these value guys are damned if you do, damned if you don't. And normally in mid-April, we were okay fading some of these value guys because, you know, there's limited upside with someone who's only getting 21 minutes. You know, 21 minutes, 17 points, you can get over that in a cash game. You can find balance around that and just say, okay, I'm going to target some 7, 6K guys, 5K guys who are in a better position who I think can exceed that 4X or 5X number. And the problem is now you have this opportunity for a lot of these Sharks to take, and this is a very viable cash game strategy that a lot of these guys use. They take the minutes from the value guys. So, you know, you have these rotations like Philadelphia is the perfect example where there's nobody healthy and you have all of these guys in the 4Ks who haven't been getting any minutes all year. The FanDuel algorithms aren't catching up because they're based on season long, combination of season long and recent trends. They're not catching up to the fact that Timothy Luau Cabarrot is getting 32 minutes. And so his price stays depressed and he gets 32 minutes and he goes 8X. And if your value, if that value guy goes 8X and he performs like he's a 5 or 6K player, you have to be on him. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation with this value chalk. You know, and I think that we have to either get on board or, you know, you can try to stick to your guns, but I think in some degree we have to get on board if we're playing in the same pools as these guys. So what did I do on Sunday night? Well, I did the exact same thing that I've been seeing people do. I tackled that value. I went hard on the value guys, and then I went hard on my studs. And, you know, I didn't even hit a higher number than what I had hit the other night. You know, I hit three, where's that number? I hit 308, 308, you know, technically not as good as the other number, but strategically I was in the boat with the same guys. The difficulty was that I didn't have any Paul George or LeBron James shares, and Sam Decker left with an injury. But I went on Sunday night, I rostered the obscene cash values, Lou Williams and Eric Gordon and Sam Decker and Justin Anderson. I tackled four value plays in that lineup, and that allowed me to get on Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, and Steph Curry as three studs. And so you kind of think of this as like, okay, you could go two for two. You know, you can get two studs and two value guys. You go three for three or four value guys. And, you know, you have the opportunity with this value that's opening up because of these rotations, you have the opportunity to add roster and roster extra studs. And when those studs go off, you have to be on them. And that's what happened on Friday night. Giannis went for 60. Russ went for 60. Kawhi with the major second half in Oklahoma City goes for 50. You know, I mean, all these things add up to the fact that you kind of have to take your chances with the value guys that are chalky, because if they go off alongside the studs, then you have these massive numbers. So something to think about, something to think about for sure. You know, we saw it, like I said, we saw it on Sunday night. People were able to roster LeBron and Paul George in that game because they had incredible value on the slate. So we got to think about it tonight. We're going to look at it again. You know, we're going to get into the player breakdown. We'll go through the spreads real quick here, and then we'll get into the player breakdown. And we'll talk a little bit about lineup construction in this way and how it's useful. And I don't think, you know, I think the way it makes being contrarian easier, yes. But it also, you kind of got to get on board or get off board. You either got to commit to, I'm going to be contrarian here, I'm going to go more balanced, and I'm going to hope that the chalk busts. If the chalk doesn't bust, though, you're in the cold. Just know that. All right. So let's go ahead into the slate tonight and let's look at the games we got. Okay. So first game of the night. This is one of those games where there's rock chalk full of value. 221 total. Brooklyn at Philadelphia. I mean, this is it. This is what I'm talking about, guys. This is that game, right? This is the game where you kind of have to be on some of these plays. A massive total, massive pace, tons of value. I mean, starting lineups for both of these teams are basically in the 4Ks. I mean, that's crazy. You have. I'm looking at the starting lineups. You have, on the Brooklyn side, you have Jeremy Lin and Brooke Lopez, who are priced above 6K. And you have, on the Philadelphia side, TJ McConnell, Dario Saric, and Rashawn Holmes, priced above 6K. I mean, everybody else priced in the 4s, the 5s, and the 3s. So we have to attack some of this value because these guys are going to be getting huge minutes while these teams are punting their season and trying to figure out how to tank. So, you know, like I said, 221 total in this one. Philly only favored by one at home. So many injuries on both sides of the ball. Joe Harris out for the season. Isaiah Whitehead out right now for Brooklyn. And then, of course, on the Philadelphia side, unbelievable numbers of injuries. Sergio Rodriguez still with the hammy. Jared Bayless out. Julius Okafor out. Ben Simmons out. Bob Covington out. Joel Embiid out. You know, such a limited rotation they have in Philadelphia. So you have to attack some of that value for sure. Charlotte at Washington, 218 total in this one. Washington favored by four. Washington probably happy to get home finally. You know, had a rough stretch there. Had Utah, had Golden State. You know, their late season stretch here is not ideal, but they are locked into that three seed, so they got to be feeling good. No serious injuries to consider in this one, but Charlotte playing really well. Won their last two games. They're still mathematically in the hunt. They need some help from some of the teams in front of them, the Miamis and the Indianas of the world, but they are technically still in the hunt here. You know, they had a couple good W's where we didn't know if they were going to be able to get that. Like, that Denver game was a huge win for them. That would have kind of put them out of the mix, but they're still one game out. So look for Charlotte to play hard here. They're going to stay in the fight, it seems like. Orlando at Cleveland, 220 total here. Cleveland favored by nine, but Orlando proving they are not an easy out, getting to the last bucket of the night against Boston right now. Orlando playing pretty well. I mean, they've got a tight rotation. You know, this is another team that has a lot of value. Now, those guys are now in the 5s and the 6s and the 7s, you know, the Aaron Gordons and the Alfred Paytons and the Terrence Ross is the world. But this is another team that cash games have been really, really heavy with because these guys are underpriced given their role because the rotation's really, really small and they are, you know, pretty poor defensive teams. So there's a lot of scoring going on. So, you know, definitely a team to look at, definitely a game to look at. I'm going to keep my eye on the Cleveland news. I mean, after a double overtime game, even though they won, I wouldn't be surprised if you see somebody, not all three of the big three, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see somebody rest. I don't know who it would be. Maybe K-Love just because of the knee. I wouldn't be surprised, though. Although, you know, Cleveland can barely afford to take any risks these days, being that they are still a half a game back of the Celtics, you know. And now the Raptors even nipping at their heels, man. The Raptors are only 2.5 back. You know, I mean, imagine if Cleveland, for some godforsaken reason, loses to Orlando and the Raptors win tonight in Indy. Then you really have a situation on your hands. The Raptors jumped above the Wizards. So, you know, the middle of the East is not settled. You got to think that these teams are going to kind of start to be a little bit more nervous about their position there in the standing. So, that's an important game for Cleveland, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see some rest candidates just because they need the rest, man. But they need the win. Toronto at Indiana, 205 total here. Indiana favored by 3 at home. These teams have been playing each other pretty well. You know, I mean, Toronto definitely the better team right now. I think the biggest injury news that we have to keep our eye on is whether or not PJ Tucker is going to play. This changes the game a lot. It makes this game way more competitive because PJ Tucker would guard Paul George and make his life very difficult. I think Indiana has a good shot at winning this game if Tucker sits. Now, he did return to practice on Monday, so we'll see about Tucker. If he goes through shoot around here, he should be cleared to play and upgraded to probable. But he's got a sore knee. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I would love to see Tucker sit. That way you could stack up Paul George and DeMar DeRozan and two really priced, well-priced guys who are the guy on their team, the only one doing any good work. So definitely interested possibly in the two studs on either side of the ball there and maybe a little Jonas Valanciunas as well. Denver, New Orleans, 227 total here. New Orleans favored by 7. God, you really want shares of this game. I just don't know how to get it. I mean, there's not a lot of defense. I think what we have to think about is the backcourt situation. You know, the problem with Denver now is that they're so deep. You know, they have a lot of people playing. The only people who are getting really, really, really rock solid minutes that are kind of safe plays are guys like Gary Harrison, Gallo. Those are the guys who are going to get you 30 minutes. Even Jokic is kind of like meh lately. I mean, he played amazing in the first half against Miami. We were talking about this on Twitter. It just seems like fitness. This guy just can't finish games. He just can't. He doesn't have the pop at the end of the game. He plays amazing in the first half. Looks quick. Denver offense looks really, really nice, and then he just kind of trails off and sputters out. You know, we've seen this from him a couple times. Hard to trust him against Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. You know, New Orleans put a hurting on Denver at Denver with just Davis, no Cousins in the lineup. So you got to think that a New Orleans team that's been playing pretty well lately should be able to handle Denver here. You know, I don't know, but a massive total. You really like this. The biggest news that we're going to keep our eye on is whether or not Jameer Nelson is going to play. If he does not play, then obviously we're going to have some exposure to Jamal Murray and Emmanuel Mudiay. Now, shout out to DFS Spectre, who, reading beat reports, found out that Mudiay was slated to get more minutes than Murray. Yep, it happened. Mudiay played 30 minutes and scored 35 fantasy points against Miami. And Jamal Murray had like 17. Milwaukee at OKC, 210 total here. OKC favored by 5. You know, Milwaukee playing really pretty well right now. You know, OKC struggling. I don't know how I don't know how. I mean, it's the Spurs, but like they were up by, I think, 13, 14 points. Me and my wife were watching. We turned it off because it was like, okay, you know, it's over. You know, but Thunder basically trying to stay in that hunt for that five seed. They would love to be the five seed, but they're now a full three games back of the Clippers, and it just doesn't really look like it. So they're going to try, you know, to stay, I think, in a matchup with the Rockets, who, you know, they just don't want to play the Spurs. Nobody wants to play the Spurs. You don't want to play the Spurs. It's the Spurs. You don't want to play the Spurs in the playoffs. Playoffs. So, yeah, you know, Gatto get a win here. Both sides, Milwaukee playing extremely well. You know, and no serious injuries here, really. I mean, the Malcolm Brogdon don't care. It really, I mean, I guess you could go Matthew Dellavedova. He had a couple good games recently, you know, and he's min price, you know, which makes him viable because you're asking a guy who's a veteran point guard to go get you 18 points. But, you know, ever since Brogdon left the lineup here, Delly has, you know, he's done okay. He did 19 points and he did 24 points, but he's just not the primary ball handler in that offense. It's either going to be Middleton or it's going to be Giannis. And honestly, Giannis learns this like 0.4 pick and roll situation. I mean, they just run all they do all day, Milwaukee. They just run a screen and roll to the left. Giannis, they get him a screen to his left hand. He goes to his left hand and they will try to get it into the middle, or they'll pop, or he'll kick it across the zone to Middleton, who's waiting opposite. Every single time. They were in this play probably 10 times on repeat against Detroit. And they freaking fouled Giannis probably every single time. And then the other times it was a Yathan Maker 3. I don't know. I mean, the film is out on Milwaukee, guys. Like, they aren't, it's not complicated, but hey, props to Jason Kidd for hammering what works, you know? Don't make it, keep it simple, stupid. So, you know, this should be a competitive game for sure, and a good one. I don't know that I want Russ at 13-6, though. Milwaukee is a pace-down team. But, of course, Russ always viable in cash just because of the massive ceiling and the massive upside. Chicago at New York, 206 total here. Chicago favored by 3 on the road. New York, another rotation where you have a lot of value popping up because of the injuries. No Derrick Rose, no Joakim Noah, probably no Carmelo Anthony, Lance Thomas battling the hip injury. I don't know if you're going to see any of these guys play. You know, I don't think so. I don't know why they would continue to play Carmelo. Just go into full development mode. There's only 6 games left in the season. What's the point? Just let the guy rest. I mean, I'm not really sure. You know, and then on the Bulls side of the ball, Bulls playing really well. They're up into the 7 seed, which is infuriating because, you know, Garpax and Fred Hoiberg are going to sit there and be like, yeah, see, we have a good team. We knew we had a good team. Shut the fuck up. You didn't know you had a good team. You botched this rotation for 60 games. And all of a sudden, you decide, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give Jimmy the ball, and we're going to let Rondo push the pace, and then we're going to fill in the role players around him, all the young guys who actually want to play, not named Dwayne Wade. All of these young guys who really, really want to try and give the NBA a shot. You have a dozen of them on your bench, and they've all been sitting there waiting, and they're actually decent. Zipser, Mirotić, you know, Valentine playing hard. All these guys are playing hard. They're playing well. You know, it's no surprise that they're playing decent ball because now they have pace. They're not waiting for Dwayne Wade ISO plays, you know, and you're not giving 30 minutes to a guy who's 32 years old and costing you millions of dollars. It's just stupid. How do you not figure that out? How do you not figure out how your rotation should work? You have a stud. You have role players. Just do it. Just do it the simple way. I don't get it. They would be a lot more like the Bucks right now. They would be a lot more like the Bucks. Trending up, decent season, single star, you know, franchise in the East that if they get a couple more pieces and they stay healthy, they could really, really, really have something on their hands. But now Jimmy's out. Whole team's going to have to go through rebuild mode, and we're going to have to deal with Garpax for another 5 years making shitty decisions. Memphis at San Antonio, 194. San Antonio favored by 9. Stay away. Not interested. I mean, there's so many. The only reason that you have to play this game is if all of these Memphis guys sit, then you have to. And honestly, then they may sit LaMarcus as well. There might be some extra Spurs sitting if it's just benches versus benches of these old teams that are just like, hey, what do you say we just rest everybody? But Marc Gasol, game time. Tony Allen, Jermichael Green, Andrew Harrison, Vince Carter got the rest the other day, but Vince Carter should be back. I mean, it's just crazy, you know, and we played these guys against the Lakers on Sunday, and they all, you know, James Ennis and Brandon Wright and all these guys. Hey, listen, if they are the only Grizzly players in play, then you got to play them. You got to play them. You have to, because who else is going to play? You have to play them. So we got to keep an eye on the news of the Grizzlies guys, because it's just too much value down there, especially even against the Spurs. And listen, this is going to be one of those games that the Spurs have in their back pocket, because you got no Marc Gasol. Kawhi is not going to get a ton of minutes here in this situation. Pace down, you know, it could be, you know, a 15 or 20 point game by the half type situation. So we'll see. Minnesota at Golden State, 218 total here. Golden State favored by 14. No question. Golden State is just, they're looking killer death. Golden State. It's just filthy the way that they're playing right now. Just destroying teams within seconds. You know, I mean, we are seeing this, you know, this team that basically has the ability to run you out of the building in a matter of under 3 minutes. It's dirty. The defense is so good right now. So KD looking to come back too by Saturday. I don't even know if they'll force him back by Saturday. I wouldn't. I would say maybe you get limited practices this week. Maybe you get 15 minutes on Saturday. You ease him back into the rotation. You don't force it. And then Minnesota playing well. I mean, we know what that rotation looks like. It's just not a ton of guys that I'm too excited about against the Golden State defense. I love the pace for them, but the defense is just too good right now. And, you know, Rubio is priced appropriately now. And Wiggins is just not showing a ceiling. And I said it before, I don't think Towns has the legs. I don't think he has the legs right now. And I think there's limited upside against Draymond Green in a game that they know they're going to lose. Dallas and Sacramento, 195 total here. Sacramento favored by 2. Disrespectful to Dirk. But, I mean, Dallas just not playing that well right now. I guess mathematically they are still in it. But, you know, they're a half a game behind the Pelicans, and the Nuggets are still, you know, I just don't see it. It's not going to happen for Dirk this year, but they're still playing these guys. I think the big injury news that we have to consider is whether or not Seth Curry is going to play. The Seth Curry injury news really does matter, because then it's Wes Matthews is the only guy out there, and we love to attack the wings in Sacramento. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure. And I think Nerlens, you could get some Nerlens news. So we're going to keep an eye on the injury news in Dallas, because that could open up some serious value for us. I think may come low owned just because of the low total, low pace here in that game. Otherwise, I don't really want to touch it. Portland at Utah, 202 total here. Utah favored by 6 at home, which I think is a little bit off. I think Utah has this game. The way Portland plays without Nurk, I just don't know if they got it against a good Utah team that, you know, really, really, like, handled Washington the other night. Utah playing very well right now. We're going to keep an eye on the George Hill news. I guess you could go with some Dante Exum if we get George Hill out of here. God, there's just so much point guard value depending on the way this news breaks. You know, if we get no Jameer Nelson and no George Hill, then you got two almost min price point guards two min price point guards that may get 30 plus minutes in decent situations in Emmanuel Mudiay and Shelvin Mack. The question has always been, is it Shelvin Mack or is it Dante Exum? And it really is, it's Shelvin Mack. He's proven that he just is more efficient. You know, limited upside in that offense that they run just because there's not a lot of pace and there's not a lot of possessions and there's a lot of guys in front of him. Oh, by the way, Ron Baker is in play. I mean, good gracious. I mean, how many of these guys can you play? You can play all of these point guards. So anyway, I digress. Last game of the night, though, that Portland-Utah game. So you can have exposure to it if you want. That's it, man. 11 games. So let's jump into the player breakdown. And let's try to figure out where we're going to spend our money. All right. So lock and load. We're going to sort through the top of the slate. We're going to figure out which studs we want from where, what games, etc. You know, we've got a point guard. I think, you know, we have Russ, and obviously with the value on the slate, you can get to Russ. It's really not a problem. I got to be honest with you. Like, paying for Russ really isn't an issue in this, on this slate, because you can, you know, you could go Russ and then a min price point guard, and you've basically spent $8,000 at each of your point guard positions, which isn't restrictive pricing at all. So, you know, very, very feasible to go with Russ and then a punt play and then build out from there. That's not a problem. I have no problem if that's how you want to build your lineup. But I think the point guard that I like the most is John Wall. Steph is an interesting pivot because he's at home at Oracle and he's just been playing out of his mind. But John Wall's home as well. It's a must-win situation. Hornets are in the hunt. You know, they have a couple more. The Hornets want to stay in it, and I think this is a team. They can beat this team. They've beaten them this year. This is the fourth game. They've lost to them twice, and they've beaten them once. So they're playing well. I mean, the Hornets are a decent team. They're actually like a basketball team, you know, compared to some of these other hot messes in the Eastern Conference. You know, the Hornets feel balanced to me. I think they just need a couple more pieces. They just don't really have a superstar. Kemba's like B+. He's not an A+ superstar. John Wall, though, he's +4 at home this year. He's averaged 50 points in the last five games. He's priced at 10-4, which means that we only need 52 from him. He's averaged 42 against the Hornets this year. Two games where he had like 38 points, almost 40, and then one game where he had like 56. So, you know, this feels more like the 56-point game. They want to get a win. They're back home. John Wall's been excellent at home this year. I think what I like the most about is the Hornets are allowing really high assist numbers to the point guard right now. We know they allow scoring to the point guard, but they also, you know, are allowing really high assist numbers on this slate. You know, and on the season, they're allowing 9 assists to game, you know, 21-6-9 to the point guard, which, you know, is bottom 10 in the league. They're in the same company as, you know, Chicago, Orlando, Cleveland, all that kind of stuff. So absolutely an opportunity to attack, you know, attack the point guard position here with John Wall. But of course, like I said, Russ, very much in play. Given the value on the slate, you can easily, easily go with Russell Westbrook. I have absolutely no problem with that. You know, and at 13-6 against Milwaukee, I mean, yeah, you almost need 70 points from him, which is insanity. But hey, you know, 70 points from Russell Westbrook isn't that crazy these days. You know, I'll just say it. It just really isn't. 60 points is pretty much the floor. He goes for 60 against San Antonio. He hasn't not had a triple double since the Golden State game where they got blown out. That was the last time he missed a triple double. Jeez Louise, Russ. That's crazy, dude. I mean, that's just bananas, you guys. Like, I don't understand what do you do with that information? You know, and I don't know. You give him the MVP, I guess. But a lot of people say don't give him the MVP because he just isn't inefficient. I don't know. Or their team isn't that good. I'm not sure. But John Wall is a great, great cash game play here. I think 5X is in his future for sure. Giannis is at shooting guard here at 10-1. A really nice price for a guy who, you know, we know has 60-point upside, of course, on the opposite side of the ball from Russ at 10-1. You know, just, I mean, why wouldn't we play Giannis in a competitive game? It feels like a good spot to play him. You know, he's gotten two games over 60 in the last four. And I think what we have to understand is this happens against poor rebounding teams. Okay, it happened against Dallas. It happened to get in an Atlanta team without Millsap on the floor. happened against Sacramento. These are teams that are generally poor defensively, you know, in the front court, you know, and they don't rebound well. Dallas is one of the worst rebounding teams. That's where the upside comes. So upside is limited on the glass for Giannis in this situation, however. OKC, very good rebounding team. Top 10 in rebound rate. They're first in overall rebounds per game this year. They play above average to the four. You know, we know they're below average to the point guard, but I don't necessarily see a situation where, you know, Russ is guarding. He's not going to guard Giannis. They're going to stick a combination of Roberson and then Biggs, you know, there. They know it's a pick and roll situation. The one thing that is interesting about this, the thing that attracts me to Giannis, I went a deep dive on Giannis. I did this every once in a while with Giannis's game. OKC does have an above average foul rate, 21 fouls per game. You like that? You like the opportunity for some extra free throws in this situation. And they do allow the highest rate of like interior scoring in the league. So buckets be in within the 6 foot range, which is where we want Giannis. He's not a 3-point shooter. So, okay, fine. He's not a 3-point shooter. They're going to let me score at the rim. So there is some merit to him here, especially in full minutes, competitive game where he's going to have to be trading buckets with Ross. I think though you could easily, the problem is that Giannis is basically 40 or 60 these days. And I think you could easily get a 5X number out of DeRozan, for example. It's like, I think you have two options, right? You have Russ and you have Giannis, who we know have massive ceilings, okay? Massive ceilings. But then you right below them, you have Wall and you have DeRozan, who we know are probably, they are the guy. They're in a plus matchup and they are, you know, priced a little bit more fairly. So they open up other things on the slate. So personally, I think strategically, I always like to go with the point guard that is go with the studs that are just a little bit more safe from a price perspective. You know, okay, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but it's just kind of how I build lineups sometimes. So, you know, John Wall and DeMar very much, I think, in play for 5X. But of course, you know, Russ and Giannis very much in play for those ceilings. Those ceiling games. It's hard to decide. Maybe you mix and match. Small forward, it's Jimmy. Jimmy for me is a lock. I love LeBron, but LeBron in this situation at 10-7, coming off the massive minutes in the Pacers game. If there's anybody on this team that needs to get fewer minutes, it's LeBron. I mean, look at the stat lines for the rest of the team, and then look at LeBron. The man is just being asked to do everything. You know, so LeBron is a rest candidate for me tonight. I don't know. I keep an eye on it. I love the matchup for pace and total and terrible defense, but it makes me nervous that either he gets 28 minutes and they just try to basically control the game, or I have no idea. And they're at home too, you know, which lends upside, you know, if God, Kevin Love or Kyrie would just show up. So Jimmy at 10K though feels really, really, really nice. You know, he's playing one of the worst defensive teams in the league. He's gone over 50 in 4 of the last 8 games, and he still isn't over 10K. So, you know, this seems like a really good opportunity to attack Jimmy in a pace up situation. With a poor defensive team in the Bulls. He had 35 in one game against the Knicks, but he played limited minutes. He only had 26 minutes in that game. It's early in the season. I don't really care. I'm not going to use that as a reference point. There's really not anybody else out there to guard him. I don't think a hobbled Carmelo Anthony is going to try to bust his butt to stop Jimmy Butler in this game. You know, who's it going to be? Mindaugas Kuzminskas? Like, who guards Jimmy Butler tonight? I don't see it. Knicks are in punt mode. Bulls are in win mode. I think Jimmy does a really nice job of getting to 5X here. You know, you compare Jimmy to Giannis and DeMar. I think they're very similar plays in John Wall. I think they're very similar plays, very similar price points. They're the guy on their team, and they have an opportunity to go 5X based on their matchup and situation. So, I like those guys. That feels like predictable range of outcomes for me. I like that when I'm rostering cash game choices. Power forward, We've got two, and they're facing up against each other. It's Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic. They just played in Denver. AD destroyed them. 28 minutes, no Boogie in the lineup. He went bananas, had like 60 fantasy points. I think we have to basically look at the fact that the Nuggets are, they play at such a pace that allows their team, I think it hurts their team in some respects, and it allows other team extra possessions to get back in the game and go on these runs. And, you know, if they're not making their shots, if they make their shots, they're a really hard team to beat. When they're not making their shots, they're a very easy team to control. So, you know, I just don't think that we should expect Anthony Davis to do the same thing he did against the Nuggets last time. I like the matchup in the front court there for him. He's proven he can do the scoring. Boogie will be back, though. I just don't know how to attack this game, honestly. And Jokic is, I'm just not that interested right now. I liked him against Miami because of the really solid, you know, matchup with Whiteside. And he played really well in the first half, but we keep talking about this. He goes 30 in the first half, and then he goes 10 in the second half. And it really seems like fitness is an issue for this guy. Like, there's a bunch of people talking about it on Twitter. I just can't quite wrap my head around what the problem is with Nikola Jokic and why he can't get to his ceiling. So, you know, Denver, an excellent rebounding team. I don't necessarily know how much upside there is on the glass for Boogie and Brown now that they're both back in there. You know, New Orleans is still a bad rebounding team, however, so I guess you could go to some of the guys, the Denver front court. But this just seems unpredictable. It seems like 4X is very, very likely, you know, with 48 points out of AD, 40 points out of Jokic, 45 out of Boogie, you know, or 42 out of Boogie. And then you're kind of stuck with this guy that, like, didn't quite do enough. And you're looking at the prices of, you know, Jimmy and DeMar and Giannis and John Wall, who all could easily go for 50 given their matchup. So it's kind of a difficult situation to read, and I think it's fadeable. It's GPP worthy for sure, but I think it's fadeable in cash. At center, yes, there's Boogie, yes, there's Towns, but there's also Rudy Gobert against Portland. Okay, here's the deal. Portland is not the same team without Nurk on the floor. They're just not. They're back to their old ways where they're just kind of don't have another option. It's basically CJ and Dame versus the world and then a bunch of other guys. Nurk opened things up for them in a massive way. He's the pick and roll guy. He creates havoc in the middle, another third scoring option who can protect the paint. He's not there now. And, you know, it makes me sad, but it also makes me love, love, love Rudy Gobert at 9-1. I think Rudy Gobert is absolutely in play. 9-2, excuse me. I mean, he just went for 54 against the Spurs, who are the best DVP against the center in the league. The man is unbelievably talented. You know, he's the best defensive center in the league. The difficulty with him is that he's either going to get you 35 points or 50 points. He really doesn't have an in-between. And if he doesn't get a lot of minutes because Utah's controlling this game, then you kind of worry about his upside. You know, I think the positive here is the Blazers are going to get out-rebounded. They got out-rebounded by Minnesota last night, 35-43. Their rebounding rate is down without Nurk on the floor. Their defensive center, you know, Towns put up 37 points on them. He didn't do much else. He did like 6 rebounds, but he did 37 points, which was pretty sweet. I just think Gobert is in a great position. He's going to be low owned and he could just crush. It's a little bit more GPP, but if you're in love with 9K Rudy Gobert versus a 9K DeMar DeRozan or a 10K Jimmy, or, you know, I get it. I get it. The problem that you have is that you have to then fade some of the best values at center on the slate. And there's some really good values down there that you feel really, really secure about. So, you know, Rudy's in a great spot. I think for tournaments, you absolutely want some Rudy shares. I don't think you have to have him for cash games. Let's move on to the fantasy grout mid-price guys. The guys we're filling in the second tier here, the 5 to 8K range. There are just so much at point guard today, guys. It's unreal how much we have at point guard. Okay, so we're going to start, we got to go all the way down. Well, we're going to start with Kyrie, but Kyrie is just really not playable on this slate. You know, I love the matchup for him at 8-6. He's the same price as we saw Isaiah Thomas go for 50 against the Magic the other night. You know, but if the big three are all in, then there's really no reason to play Kyrie in this situation because of that price. And you just have so much more value for 40-point upside here. You got Rondo, for example, a plus matchup with the Knicks. He's consistently getting himself the 40 points. He's done it in three of the last four games, I believe. Let me double check that. Rondo, yeah, he's been above. Yeah, he's been the one where he didn't go for 40. He went for 37. So he's exceeded value in all four of his last games. Love Rondo in this spot. Knicks don't allow a lot of scoring to the point guard position, strangely enough, below 20 points. But they do allow a ton of rebounds and assists all over the floor. So that's what Rondo does, you know. And against Ron Baker and Chisson Randall, I don't really have a problem at all. I have no problem with Rajon Rondo in this spot, especially at that price. You know, especially knowing that he's probably going to get 30 minutes so that the Bulls make sure that they lock up this win and stay in that 7 seed tonight. Elfrid Payton is a maniac these days. He has four of his last five games, he has 39 or more points. flirting with 50 in a couple of these. We know the Cavs allow some of the most scoring to point guards in the season. You guys know I love Elfrid Payton. I think there is limited upside in this situation just because I don't know how many more peripherals the rest of the Cavs defense is going to allow to him. You know, I think he'll hit value. I do. I really do. I think he'll get you between 35 and 40 points, but this isn't as much of a lock as when I loved him against Boston after Avery Bradley went out. So I love Elf, but you know, I don't think he's a must have, but he's a great option if, you know, he just kind of falls to you and you're like 7-5, 7. Oh, okay. Great. Elf. You know, I would love Jrue Holiday too. Point guards against Denver, and Holiday has a lot of upside, but he's just not consistent enough. His role is kind of mediocre right now. They're not relying on him for scoring. I just think that you get a really wide range of outcomes with him. You could get to 5X, but you could also end up with 23 points, you know, and that just doesn't interest me in cash game. So then you go down and you've got TJ McConnell and Jeremy Lin, who are both basically priced at 5-6 and 6-1. They both went 5X in the exact same head-to-head matchup when they played each other. You know, if Sergio Rodriguez is out, then TJ McConnell's going to play 30 minutes. If Isaiah Whitehead is out, then Jeremy Lin's going to play over 30 minutes. You know, they're not flashy, but they're cash game viable for sure. The problem is that you have basically four or five different min price point guards on this slate that you could play, which is insane. I mean, almost min price four guys below 4K. So we got to talk about them. At shooting guard, there's a couple decent options here that I really like. I got to start with Beal and Clay, both at 7-5. I mean, just really great prices for these, both of these guys. I really, really like their spot that they are in, you know, 30-point floor, 40-point upside for both of them. Very, very consistent, very, very rock-solid cash game plays. If you're building a balanced lineup in one of your GPP lines to be contrarian, I think Beal and Clay, lock them in, both. Get them both in there. Because if they both go for 42 points, then you're in really, really good shape. We know how much upside they both have. You know, if I have to pick one, it's probably going to be Beal because he's got the more like must-win matchup and a plus matchup with Charlotte. They allow a lot of three-point shooting. He's plus two at home this year. He's averaged 34 coming off a day of rest. I think we look at him as a very safe cash game. But, of course, Clay, very safe as well. He went for 40 against the Wolves about a couple weeks ago. He's hit 30 as a floor basically on a regular basis, but that's a basic issue with both of these guys. Their teams could easily win these games and these guys only get you 30 fantasy points, at which point you are basically 6 points, 7 points out of value. And you're just kind of going, God damn it, you know, and that matters on these huge scoring slates. 6 or 7 points really matters unless you get somebody else to crush value. You know, that's the problem with a balanced lineup is that when you have the ability to take all these punt plays on where guys, you know, go 4, 5, 6, 7X because they're so cheap, playing a guy in the 7Ks is risky because he could easily go 4X and kill you. And that's kind of the concern that you have with Beal and Clay. I mean, the matchups aren't a concern. The role isn't a concern. The production isn't a concern. These guys are incredible assets. I love the price. It's just a concern of whether or not they're actually going to hit value, and it's the kind of way that you want to construct your roster. There's a time when I would have locked both of them in at 7-5. And I think it's viable. I just don't know necessarily. You know, if you get 32 points out of both of them, like I said, you're going to be upset with yourself. And that's hard. That's a frustrating reality, but it's, you know, it's just true. At small forward, very similar profiles. We got two guys, Paul George and Gordon Hayward. You know, Paul George and Gordon Hayward in very nice spots. I realize that Paul George is almost stud pricing here, but I got to talk about him. I would be foolish if I didn't. You know, Paul George is in a really, really nice spot here. He's just out of the playoffs. He's at home. He's been a maniac of late. The thing that you don't love is that, you know, he's coming off of that double overtime. How are his legs? Is he going to be able to do this, or is he done? You know, was that it for Indy? Is that their last hurrah here, and Toronto's just going to kind of come in and give him a death blow and knock him down to 9th, 10th in the standings? You know, I think you have to play Paul George if PJ Tucker is out, however. That changes the whole game because they don't have that wing defense. It's going to be a combination of Damari Carroll and, I don't know, Norman Powell. Who's going to guard him? They can't guard him. They won't be able to guard Paul George without PJ Tucker. So if PJ Tucker's out, then Paul George is almost a lock. Hayward, very similar to Clay and Beal in my mind. 30-point floor, good matchup. You know, but if he gets you 30 and they win the game, you're SOL, man. You know, that's kind of the rough spot. I think, you know, he had 39 recently against Portland, so that's a good spot for him. But 39 is nailed value right here, and you're really, really playing with fire given the way that the value is working out on this slate. If we go with a Hayward guy. So, you know, I think you could easily go down to Gallinari, who probably has the same range of outcomes. And if he gets you 30, he doesn't hurt you nearly as much. Gallo pretty much getting the most consistent minutes on the Nuggets next to Gary Harris, which is interesting and strange to me at the same time. I don't really understand. I mean, I guess they really like the way he plays. He just takes so many fucking shots too. You know, he had 29 points against Miami. I don't know if he's good for them. I gotta be honest with you. He's a good player, but I don't know how good he is for them. You know, he struggled against New Orleans at home in that game when he came back. But, you know, they're really, him and Chandler are hard to predict, man. That's the truth. And you could go with them, but they're just hard to predict their range of outcomes. You know, and then I think obviously you have a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 5'3". Very, very interesting opportunity for Hollis-Jefferson here against Philadelphia. He played really well against Philly. He went 6X against Philly the last game, 31 points. He stuffs the stat sheet. He does it all. You know, he does it all. So you really like Hollis-Jefferson in this spot as well. But you very easily go with Jimmy and then a value play, and we'll talk about it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. At power forward, it's a little bit more clear how we got to approach power forward, right? There's a bunch of guys in the 7Ks that are kind of fadeable. I think that they are fadeable. The only one that's really interesting to me in the 7Ks is Kristaps. But there's knocks against all of them at their prices or their roles right now in the 7Ks. So then you go down to the 6Ks. And the 6K guys really aren't that much different than the 5K guys, to be honest with you. So you got to look at the 5K guys. And then below that, there's really not a lot that I love unless we get some injury news to open up. You got the Portland guys against Utah, but I don't really want to do that. So I'm going to stay in the 5K range here. I'm going to stay in the 5K range. And I think that what we're going to find is you could easily make an argument for Nikola Mirotic and Frank Kaminsky. I think that they're both in play. Obviously, people are going to want to really, really going to want to chase Aaron Gordon. And they're really, really want to chase Serge Ibaka. But let's be clear about this. Serge Ibaka's 45-point games, massive outlier against Philadelphia, okay? They're a terrible front court, terrible rebounding team. Serge had 6 blocks. That's not going to happen again, guys. He gets 1 or 2 blocks a game. You take 5 blocks off that total, it's a normal, you know, it's a 35-point outing, okay? But, you know, Serge only had 25 points against Indiana last time. I see a much more tight range of outcomes for Ibaka in this game. I don't think we can chase that. And I looked into Aaron Gordon. Why is Aaron Gordon going for 50 points in the last two games? Well, the last two games, he played 2 of the worst rebounding teams in the majors. Wow, baseball. 2 of the worst rebounding teams in the NBA, he had 15 and 16 rebounds. So either his rebounding role has completely changed and he is their primary rebounder and they're pushing Vooch up the floor, or he just took advantage of the fact that Boston and Brooklyn can't rebound. You know, he's been doing a lot of scoring. He's been doing a lot with the basketball, but I think it's a little bit chasey to expect him to go for 15 rebounds against LeBron, who will be down there getting rebounds, and Kevin Love too. I mean, Kevin Love, LeBron, and Tristan Thompson are not Al Horford and Amir Johnson. This is not Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Brooke Lopez, guys. This is Kevin Love, LeBron, and Tristan Thompson. I don't see double-digit rebounds in Aaron Gordon's future tonight. I see some regression here, so I don't mind him, but I do like Nico in this spot at 5'6". He's priced really well. He's going to get a terrible defensive team in New York. And his minutes have been very, very secure. I really do feel like there's 30-point upside here for Mirotić against a bad rebounding team in New York, with questionable bigs in there, really. I mean, really questionable bigs. And Nico gets hot and he plays well and he gets his 30 minutes. I think this is a good spot for Mirotić against the Knicks. The other one is Frank Kaminsky, like I mentioned. Kaminsky just very, very solid. I think you know what you're going to get when you pay for Kaminsky. You're going to get 28 minutes. You're going to get 28 to 30, you know, sorry. You're going to get 25 to 30 minutes, and you're going to get 25-point floor, you know, with 30-point upside. And we know that Washington struggles in the front court with the 4. We just saw Draymond go off against them. I think Frank the Tank could really, really get some good run here. He's been getting really good run in these spots. And it's not a bad position to play him. Not at all. I think that you absolutely have Frank in play at that price. You know, if you want to go up to Marv, who's in a very, very similar position, you absolutely can go up to Marv. He had 34 against them last time. It's a question of cost. Are you going to pay 5-4 or 6-4? You know, you get 24 points to 34 points. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's up to you. It's up to you. So not bad, not bad. At center, we got Brolo. No question. I mean, there's really no reason to go to anyone else in the mid-tier except for Brook Lopez. He's got Philadelphia. He's been absolutely on a tear of late, flirting with 50 points. In 2 of the last 3 games, had 50 against Atlanta, had 48 against Philadelphia. Philadelphia, worst team against the center. They have been all year. I just don't see any reason that you don't want to play Brook Lopez in this situation. I love Brook Lopez here. I'm almost making him a lock. There's just one other guy. There's 2 other guys that I could really, really see myself going with, you know, just kind of as rock solid values as well. So, you know, Brooke is in an excellent position in this spot to exceed value at 7-9, 40. What, we get 40 points out of that? We're above 5x. That's great. Okay, let's go into the bargain basin. We're going 5K range and below. And the point guard situation is just bananas, you guys. It's just absolutely insane. So I'll start basically. You've got to start with Denver. You got Jamal Murray and Emmanuel Mudiay. Figure out who's starting. If Jameer Nelson sits, then we go from there. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Mudiay getting the minutes. I just think, I don't know why, but I think they want to give him a shot. They gave him a shot at the beginning of the season. He played really well against Miami. I don't necessarily see them taking those minutes back. I'm not really sure how that's going to pan out. Then you've got Shelvin Mack, who basically is 20 points waiting to happen if George Hill is out. okay? It's 3-6. Then you've got Matthew Dellavedova, the 3-5. Not the primary ball handler, but a decent matchup with OKC. If I don't have to roster Matthew Dellavedova, I'm not rostering Matthew Dellavedova. And then you got Ron Burgundy. Ron Burgundy at 3-5, absolutely in play. No question in my mind that he's going to get 25-plus minutes in this situation against Chicago, who's a pretty poor defensive team against the point guard. We know that. Ron Baker getting you 18 points is not crazy in 30 minutes here of play. He went for 25 against Miami, and he went for 15 against Boston. You know, it's not my favorite. I think my favorite situation has to be the Denver situation, just because there's so much pace, there's so much scoring upside to that game that, you know, I think that one of those guys is absolutely going to be in play, and it's probably going to be Moutier. I don't really know why, but it probably will be. Murray just can't really seem to crack 20, 24, 28 minutes, and he's just really not doing a lot of scoring. Now, that said, New Orleans is a really plus matchup, and you could easily see him going 5X in this situation. So if you want to be different, that's fine. But Moutier is a little bit more of a traditional point guard and fits the role and, you know, has 30-point upside, which he showed. You know, I mean, in a plus matchup with New Orleans, he really got to like that a lot. So that's where we're at, guys, at point guard. There's so much down there. Shooting guard, there's a lot here, too. We got Stauskas and Timothy Luau-Cabarrot. They're both almost have to be in your lineup, one of them, because they got Brooklyn. They're getting 30 minutes. My preferred is TLC. TLC running the three. I think he just does more with the basketball. If Stauskas can't hit a shot, then Stauskas is going to have limited upside, whereas Cabarrot will do defense. He'll do rebounds. He'll do assists. He'll run the floor, that kind of thing. Then you've got both of the New Orleans guards, Tim Frazier and Jordan Crawford, splitting minutes, doing good work on the perimeter there. 20 points out of either one of them is very reasonable. Wes Matthews is going to be very much in play if Seth Curry sits with the shoulder. Bad perimeter defense in Sacramento. You know, Wes could easily do some good work in that spot as well. At 4-8, he's in play. At small forward, you got, again, some guys who are almost must plays, and one of them is Justin Anderson, 3 at 4K, again, going up against Brooklyn. He's basically going to get 30 minutes in this matchup, because we know that there's no Bob Cove in there, so it's Justin Anderson and TLC basically playing out there at the 2 and the 3 on the wings, and Anderson, again, just like TLC, does a lot. He gets the rebounds, he gets the buckets, you know, he runs the floor. You know, I think the TLC and Justin Anderson are almost must-have based on their matchup, the pace, the high total, the minutes, all of them. They're almost must-haves. But then, of course, you have Joe Johnson, and he's in play because there are going to be no Derek Favors out there, and, you know, you don't mind a matchup in the 4 spot against Portland. And DeMar Carroll will be in play, as much as I hate DeMar Carroll, and I hate playing DeMar Carroll. I'm not interested in it that much. But he will be interesting if there's no PJ Tucker. He will have to be a little bit more interesting. But actually, Norman Powell is just as interesting if there's no PJ Tucker, because then basically it opens up the second unit scoring to Powell being the primary scorer. So absolutely an option there. Power forward, Noah Vonleh, he's been in play. But of course, Utah front court, I don't know how much of that I want. I don't really trust Noah Vonleh against Rudy Gobert. Al-Farouq Aminu, he's been out of his mind, but in plus matchups, right? At 4-8, he's been absolutely excellent. So, you know, hopefully what happens here is Aminu and Vonleh get shut out and their prices stay down and we can play them again in a better matchup than the one against Utah. The other thing is Bobby Portis. For some reason, Bobby Portis got 30 minutes the other night and Mirotić went back to the bench. That's terrifying, because I love Mirotić in this spot, and I don't really understand why Portis. I guess I got to think that it's because they needed the big body against Boogie and the Brow, and Portis was able to offer a little bit more physical resistance than Mirotić. They're not going to need that necessarily from Portis tonight against the Knicks. Mirotić should be able to match up pretty decently with Kristaps. You know, I think they'll probably do some splitting of the minutes, but the majority should go to Nico in this spot. At center, two really options, really good options. Jonas Valanciunas against Indiana. He has been on a tear recently, and I love Jonas Valanciunas in this spot at this price. He's just been playing really, really, really well, and I'm not really sure why or how he's figured it out. But he really has, man. 40 points against Indy in his last game, 40 against Charlotte. Basically, he hasn't gone below 29 points since the Orlando game. So, you know, Valanciunas is getting 30 minutes more or less a game, and this is a really plus matchup against Indiana. I love Valanciunas in this spot. But, of course, I'd be a fool if I mention Brolo and I don't mention Rolo. Rolo in an equally positive matchup against the Knicks front court against their centers. You know, you've got to love Rolo in a plus matchup in this situation. The Knicks bottom five in DVP to the center. Not nearly as bad as the 76ers, but pretty freaking bad. So you have amazing matchups for Rolo, Jonas Valanciunas, and Brolo. So, you know, it's just, those guys are all in play. They're all 100% options on this slate. All right. Now that we have all that out of the way, let's go ahead and take a look at lineup lock and figure out how we want to construct a lineup tonight. Okay, so based on what I said earlier, guys, I think one of the things that we have to do is we have to lock in value plays that we know are going to exceed value. Because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And what that offers then is a lot of upside as far as access to studs. Okay, so at point guard, I think you are a foolish man if you do not lock in a sub 4K point guard in your cash games. Now, obviously, I love rostering two 7K guys. And I would happily roster Elf and Rondo in this situation. But I think you do need to think about Emmanuel Mudiay here. He's probably going to, if Jameer Nelson is out, then we have to think about him. Jameer Nelson is in, then okay, changes the whole thing. Because I don't think you have to think about Shelvin Mack. I don't know that you have to think about Ron Baker. You don't have to think about, who's the other one? Dellavedova. Like, they're not must plays, but Emmanuel Mudiay against the poor defense in the Pelicans, or excuse me, poor point guard defense is kind of an interesting option, especially if we know he's going to get 35 minutes, which I don't really know if he will, but if he gets 32 minutes against Miami, I don't know why he wouldn't get 30 minutes against the Pels. So you have to think about that. At shooting guard, you have to think about a 4K shooting guard, okay? You have to basically go down to a 4K guy and figure out who your favorite is, whether it's starting with Nick Stauskas and going down from there. I've said it, I think my favorite is Luau Cabarrot, TLC, 30 minutes for him. He does more than just score. I like that out of my shooting guards. I don't really love, he actually plays the three more. I don't love a shooting guard that's just a pure scorer, but absolutely in play. Jordan Crawford, Norman Powell, if Damari Carroll sits, will be in play. J.R. Smith has had a couple really good games, too. If you want to get a little bit risky, you could do that. But, you know, I think the safest one that you have is TLC. And then at small forward, I think you also have to lock in a value small forward here because it's just too much value at small forward. Now, you have guys like Joe Johnson, you have Evan Turner, not so much, but you have Joe Johnson, you have Mo Harkless, Justin Anderson, Kuzminskis might get minutes if there's no Carmelo. All of these guys playing extremely well of late, getting 30 minutes. Vince Carter has been playing well. It's just like, you have to take one of them because somebody's going to go 10X. Somebody's going to score 30 points at 3K. My favorite for the matchup and the role is Justin Anderson. It feels the safest. I know what's going to happen there. He's not coming off the bench. But James Ennis is, I don't love the matchup, honestly. James Ennis, I don't love his matchup. I liked him a lot better, obviously, against the Lakers. you know, he's in play as well, and had, you know, has had some decent run in these matchups. So you have to lock in one there. So you got to lock in a cheap point guard. You got to lock in a cheap shooting guard. You got to lock in a cheap small forward. That means that we're basically looking at three value plays on this slate. Now, if you're saying, listen, I really like the studs at shooting guard, great, then lock in two small forwards or lock in two cheap point guards. Or I really like the small forwards, then lock in two shooting guards. I'm locking in one of each just to show you guys that there's options at each of those three. I think at power forward and center, you kind of want to stay in the 5K plus range. You know, maybe you go Rolo. Rolo is the cheapest you go down there, which is fine. You could go Rolo for sure and then, you know, take some value in other places. But you're basically, what I'm trying to say is you're going stars and scrubs with the top three positions in your lineup, point guard, shooting guard, and small forward. And then you're kind of going, you know, even plus matchups for the other three. So let's say we got Moutier, TLC, and Justin Anderson in there. Well, I'm going to now decide how I want to build the rest of this lineup. I'm going to try to figure out where I'm going to go with the rest of these guys. And, you know, for me, I think that Brolo is my favorite center on the slate. I love Brolo. I have no problem playing Brook Lopez in this situation. Give me some Brook Lopez, absolutely in play, okay? Then I really love Jimmy as well, okay? Jimmy in play for sure. So small forwards are now Jimmy Butler and Justin Anderson. At shooting guard, we talked about the possibilities of guys like Clay and Brad Beal. Very much in play, very much have upside, absolutely. But I think that DeMar DeRozan is in a really good position as well. And at 9-2, I just really like that price and the ability to go 5X there. You know, 45 points for DeMar has been pretty consistent number. He just went for 55 against Indiana. You know, and in tougher matchups where he has to score, that's when he really does good work. And we like the perimeter defense, lack of perimeter defense, excuse me, against Indiana. You know, not great at stopping the two guards. So I don't mind DeMar DeRozan here at all. Not a question, not a problem for me to go to DeRozan in this spot. So then that makes my shooting guards DeRozan and TLC. And I know I have Emmanuel Moutier at point guard. Well, if I pick my power forward, depending on how I pick my power forwards, and I want Nico. Okay, if I go Nico and Frank, that leaves me with 10K. Now, obviously, I've talked about John Wall, but if I can get... if the difference between me really liking my power forward situation versus liking my shooting... I mean, like Steph versus John Wall, right? 700 or 400 bucks. The 400 bucks is basically the difference between... TLC, and I could go down from Timothy Luau-Cabarrot, and I could go down to a Jordan Crawford, and then I can get up to John Wall, okay? But I don't really have a problem, because I think TLC has, I think Timothy Luau-Cabarrot has 30-point upside in this situation against Brooklyn. He just did it against Brooklyn the other day. You know, because he plays the three and they give up a lot of production to the three. He went for 33 points against them. He went for 25 against Cleveland, 25 against Toronto, 25 against Atlanta. I mean, I know I'm going to get at least 5 or 6X out of this guy. I really want him in my lineup. So I have no problem then pivoting down to and compromising by going with Steph Curry. I mean, that's the compromise that you make, right? I mean, give me a break. That's a pretty fucking good compromise, right? That's a joke. So here's where we're at. I know that was kind of a haphazard way to talk about lineup construction. But let me tell you what we did. We got Emmanuel Moutier, TLC, and Justin Anderson, point guard, shooting guard, small forward. We locked in those value plays, okay? Then we took our favorite other players on the board, Brook Lopez, Nikola Mirotic, Frank Kaminsky, Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan, and it left us with 10K for Steph Curry. Boo-hoo. So Steph Curry's the last piece of my lineup. Steph Curry falls to me during lineup construction. I mean, it's not the end of the world. Now, I said I could easily figure out how to get to, John Wall. It's not hard. You just pivot off of one of these value guys, or you pivot down off of Frank or Mirotić or whatever, and you can do it, you know? And you could easily pivot down off of Brook Lopez and get Jonas Valanciunas, you know? And then you can upgrade all over the place. In fact, if you go down from Brook Lopez to, if you really like Russ, for example, you can go down off of Brook Lopez, get Russ, and then, oh, you got to make a couple more moves to get to. So here's what we do. You go Russ, you get down off of Brook Lopez, and you go to Rolo. And then you get down off of TLC, and you go to, where is it? You go down to Jordan Crawford. So then you have Russ, Moutier, DeMar DeRozan, Jordan Crawford, Jimmy Butler, Justin Anderson, Mirotić, Kaminsky, and Rolo rather than Brolo. But I think that the pairing of having Steph and Brolo is really, 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 really nice. I mean, you get Steph and Brolo versus Frank and Rolo, versus Russ and Rolo. I mean, I really want Brolo in this situation. So I'm going to stick with Brolo and Steph and TLC. You know, and the advantage of Steph is also, by the way, that Steph gives me a late hammer. I don't have a late hammer in this lineup. And you know, Steph always comes as a low owned late hammer and he's at home. You know, I think his range of outcomes is very similar to John Wall, the way he's been playing lately. So I don't have a problem with that. But guys, you can play with it all you want. I mean, you could easily get LeBron in here. You can easily get, Russ in here. You can easily get Giannis in here. You know, if you want to go with DeMar and Giannis, go with DeMar and Giannis. If you want to go with Jimmy and LeBron, go with Jimmy and LeBron. If you want to go with Steph and Wall, you can go Steph and Wall. You know, and I think contrarian, you go balanced. I mean, you could go with the Davis and Jokic, and then do values in the other spots. You could go Davis and Jokic and do two shooting guard values and balance out your small forwards and your point guards. I mean, if you want that, it's crazy. But this to me is where we're taking advantage of matchups, and we're also taking advantage of good pricing. So it's Steph, Moutier, DeRozan, Timothy Luau-Cabarrot, Butler, Anderson, Nico Mirotić, Frank Kaminsky, and Brolo. A lot of upside in this lineup. And I feel like, you know, given the way things are going right now in April, we know we need to, you know, take a look at doing this kind of high upside, stars and scrubs type approach. All right, but that's it for me, guys. That is all. Hey, Patreon, get in there, man. We got cheat sheets for baseball. We got cheat sheets for basketball. We got conversation in the Slack channel. And by the way, yeah, we got a golf show coming up. Special edition golf Masters podcast. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Masters podcast. Look for it. It's coming up this week. I'm going to post it this afternoon. KG, DFS Kingsguard, golfing man, a man of the links, a golfer, an excellent golfer in his own right, has put together a Masters podcast for you guys. I mean, what a gift. Masters Sunday, a tradition unlike any other, said Jim Nance. You know, an excellent position. I mean, like, just an excellent, excellent situation. All over lineup logic, just going all in. Golf, we're going baseball, we're going basketball. Get in there while you can. It is an excellent, excellent, excellent community to be a part of. So $10 gets you access to all of that stuff, man. $10? Are you kidding me? For a month? Freaking Fantasy Labs and Roto Grinders Premium, all that. You can't even find a decent lineup provider unless you want to pay some, you know, 17-year-old kid, no offense. 17-year-old kid to provide you with lineups where you could learn to build your own. Anyway, hey, thank you for tuning in. I will talk to you guys later, and good luck in your time.